Welcome back, folks. Episode number 50. That's right. There's 50 Get a Grip on Lighting episodes out there. But you know what? There's a whole lot more than 50 that we recorded. Oh, yeah, baby. There's a ton of episodes out there, Greg, that will never see the light of day. Do you agree?
Other than for you and I agree. We saw.
Yes. Yeah, and a lot of them were recorded with our buddies in Nailed, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Just sitting around the table with a recorder and relaxing, drinking a couple beers and just talking about the industry. And so finally, after many deletes and many non-published episodes, here you go. What are we calling it, Greg?
The Scrub Roundtable.
This is the Scrub Roundtable of episode 50.
Bunch of lighting scrubs.
That's right. Yep. And we'd also like to thank Keystone Technologies, because you know, guys, without KeystoneTech.com, baby, without KeystoneTech.com, you know, I don't know, Greg, they really supported us in the beginning. So we thank Ira and Fred and Josh and everybody down at Keystone for supporting this show. So this one's kind of dedicated to Nailed and Keystone and that, you know, this podcast is the official podcast of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Everybody on the table of this podcast was a member of that association. So this is how we started it. Greg, what do you got to say about this thing?
I would say they were and they are currently members of Nailed. A lot of them are board members or presidents, or in my case, past president. We've got the incoming president, the current president.
In my case, kicked off the board for causing too much trouble. But yeah.
Yep, another guy who didn't want to get on the board. But we had a great conversation, and it was something that we've tried, as you mentioned, over the years. And a couple of our initial ones were with those guys, and we didn't quite get them out. But we thought this one was listenable. If that's a word.
Listenable. Okay, there you go. So folks, liking my new mic stand, all you YouTube viewers out there, that's right. You can see my face for once. Woo! Episode 50 of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Hey folks, welcome back. Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. We are here at Light Show West in Las Vegas. That's right, folks, I'm back. I'm recording on the road again, and I'm with some of my friends. We got Greg Eric, the co-host here from Premier Lighting. We got Spencer Miles of Pacific Lamp and Supply out of Seattle. Say hi to everyone, Spencer. Corey Schneider, the president of Lighting Unlimited. We got Brian, the adventurer from Adventure Lighting, and Josh Brown from KeystoneTech.com. Go to Keystone Tech. That's right. So, guys, Greggy, you said you had some questions for us. We're going to have a little bit of a roundtable session here, and hopefully we put this show out there. So what do you think of Light Show West? I've been to every trade show there is.
Yeah, we hit it for a solid half hour or so today.
And, yeah.
It was all right. It looked like every other light show we've been doing.
Just smaller.
Smaller.
Yeah.
But
a little more personable.
Yeah, there's a lot more of that going on, it looks like, but now we're here.
Now we're here.
Getting this going.
So we're gonna do a podcast here. How do you want to start this thing, Greg? You want to throw a question out there or what?
Yeah, I think it's all about just getting some questions out. We'll all kind of chime in and on our opinion, and we'll go from there. So I'm going to start off hot with this one that I thought of as we were sitting here listening to Josh talk for a little bit. If a customer came up to you and said, make my office lighting future-proof, Corey, what would you say?
Make my office lighting future-proof? Do you want wireless sensors? Or no, make it future-proof. I'd have to make sure it meets all the codes. I'd have to figure out what the code is of the wherever the office is, and make it up to, what is it, IECC 2018 or whatever, I think is the newest one. And I would have to put sensors, load shedding, all that type of stuff in there.
So that future proofs it for you.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like the word future proof. That's a tough one. What would you do, Brian?
Well, I think it'd be obviously important to have the dimming capabilities for individual zones, having it connected to a host computer, being able to be tied into like an HVAC system that somebody can monitor and be able to run reports from. Like, you know, if somebody wants to be future-proofed, my assumption would be is that they've got the money to spend and they're ready to spend it on doing it the right way.
What is the right way? I think that's the question, right?
Well, I mean, and that's the answer I'm giving is, you know, if I had an unlimited budget or the ability to get exactly what I wanted in my, you know, 100,000 square foot office building with 40 offices and a bunch of cubicle farms. You know, I would want the ability to, you know, remotely monitor everything, turn stuff on and off with programs, and not have to have any switches on the walls for anybody, be able to, you know, individually dim lights for anybody sitting underneath any particular fixture that doesn't want that much light. You know, I think that'd be a good solid start to getting to the point where you can do whatever you want, whenever you want with your lights.
I don't know, man. You think it's all IoT? Is that what the future proof is?
I think we give the other two guys a shot, and then you can give your opinion.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. If it's IoT focused, I mean, I think part of it is understanding your customer in particular, but you either go the extremely high end or on the other side. I think going to bypass tubes provides the future ability for someone to easily change out the lamps to the lower energy efficiency item without having to spend a lot of money on labor. So let's say a school goes and does a retrofit today. You're selling it on, you know, a 10.5 watt bypass tube. It's, the wire's already adjusted. You're doing the labor today. 10 years from now, maybe that tube is 5 watts, 3 watts, and you don't need an electrician to go in there and do that. You can just go do it yourself. It has a lot of long-term viability, you know, future-proof, you know, whatever that means. Who knows what the next 10, 15, 20 years, you know, the you know, who knows? LED may not even be the product, but making the assumption that it is, I think going bypass tubes gives you that option down the road to very easily upgrade without a ton of upfront costs.
It's more in line with what I was thinking. How about you, Spence?
I have a completely different approach on that. And my answer would be there is no way to future-proof your lighting.
That's a good answer.
What I'll do is I'll make your lighting not be a hassle to you for 10 years. I'll fix it. It may save you money. You're going to save, you know, cash flow. It'll work. Get what it's done. But I liken it to TVs. Do you have the same TV today you had 10 years ago?
Lighting's not a consumer product, though, man.
No, but it will. It will eventually.
You think
it's
so?
It's the same type of thing where our technology is constantly evolving. Did anybody know what 4K HD was, you know, 4 years ago?
I don't know what it is right now. But
that's my point. But
the point is this, though. But a TV is something people engage with mm-hmm. in a way that is lighting. They don't engage. Lighting is just an after effect. It's like something that happens deeper. So it's not a consumer product. That's my point. It's like there's something different about lighting than there is from electronics.
But
it's not like your phone.
I can't future-proof your lighting.
I agree with you. Yes.
I can't do that. But what I can do is help save you money today, next 5 to 10 years. And I also want the customer, right?
Yes.
If I future-proof it, he's not a customer anymore, or she.
So you're talking about, I would always do what's best for the customer. I think you're the same way. I think you would always choose the best choice for your customer.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, it's like, be realistic. Stuff burns out. If you can, like what Josh was saying about the T8 tubes, if you can replace it with something that's $10 or $15 in a couple of years, that's pretty future-proof to me. Yeah. If something better comes along, I think it is. I think T8 LED tubes and those LED tubes are about as future-proof as you can get, Gregor. Sorry, I'm interrupting everybody.
No, that's right.
It's my show.
That's kind of what I was getting at is that I don't think you can future-proof anything. I think the term is thrown out there. A lot of people bring it up, but I don't really think there is such a thing in lighting because we don't know what the future is going to be. So, what was that?
It was a trick question.
It was a trick question. I had to start it off with a trick.
You have to speak into the mic if you're going to be on the show.
Your tube option is not going to work if they change the code and they do a retrofit somewhere else in the building. And they have to put in controls by the code. You're screwed.
It's no longer a retrofit.
No, but if they change 10% of the building, they have to change 90%, the other 90% on some of these codes. So that's you're putting your customer in a bad spot if you just do bypass tubes and you don't do controls. So
I think it's all about having the capability to do things in the future with the lighting. And that's some of the issue I have with like a lot of the purpose-built stuff is once you do it, that's what you're stuck with unless you replace the whole fixture, and that's always the most expensive option. So I think there's some midterm retrofits you can do where it kind of takes care of that. But I don't think we all know that answer yet. So
what's next?
You can't future-proof lighting.
Can't. No, you can't future-proof anything. No one knows what the future is.
All right. Next thing I want to talk a little bit about is the purchasing process. I don't get a lot of it into that in my company. I do more sales side, but I know some of you guys here are really into the purchasing side. And how important back-end rebate programs or year-end rebate programs are you, to you guys in your purchasing decisions? Who wants to start that one? Spencer.
Like do rebates not energy efficiency rebates, but rebates from vendors? This is probably Keystone's probably going to like this one. Does that affect your just buying decision?
Buying process? Yeah. Yes, 100%.
Really? Okay.
I'm part of a buying group. And any vendor I deal with outside of a buying group, they need to at least match on a program what that buying group's giving me. For them to get into, you know, the top level of the line we're pushing with our sales guys.
Mm.
So you better have one. Yeah.
Yeah.
'Cause they're all there. Everybody's got them. You just got to ask, you know.
Hmm. Okay.
And when you get into a situation where you may pick up a sale, you know, you make your program in January. You pick up a sale in April you had no idea you were going to get, and you're already topping out your rebate. That vendor's going to pick up all your sales the rest of the year because now I want to maximize that rebate.
All right. And how about you, Brian?
And it helps your cash flow in January to February because you're starting to get all those checks and you're not paying your vendor.
Yeah, I say first and foremost, the year-end rebates are awfully nice. I like when the vendors we do business with are involved in the same groups that we're in, whether that be Nailed, iMark, you know, ED, whatever the groups are. You know, we support people that support us. You know, in my business buying, you know, when I'm buying a car or, you know, going along, buying some product in back in Des Moines, you know, if a company's buying from us, I'll try and make it a point to buy from them too. So that's what I'd say.
Corey?
Yeah, I mean, we're shifting a lot of our business this year to vendors that are giving us very high rebates. I mean, they wanted to take a shot at our business, and they kept the prices the same and jumped up our rebates, and we're shifting a lot of our business to those vendors. And yeah, I think it'll be nice to get some big checks.
Are you doing it strategically? So when you're like, are you looking at your monthly numbers and going, you know what, we're in the juice place with XYZ company now. We've bought more than whatever, 100 grand from them, and now we know we're in the special zone. Does that affect your daily decision making on purchasing?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, some vendors. I mean, if we get $1 million, we get an extra 5% or something from that vendor. I mean, it's, you know, if you get to 900,000 and, you know, you get an extra 5%, I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it's basically 50% off.
Yeah.
The last 100 grand, yeah. I mean,
it could be a huge deal.
Hmm.
I feel like that's probably the smart answer and smart thing to do, but I just don't want to get into that, man. I want to sell lights and be efficient as I can. And if I have to worry too much about that, then I'm not really able to do the job that I want to do, which is get the right product to the customer.
Oh, I've always thought that rebates were a way for you to focus on the wrong thing.
Yes.
It gets you focused on buying from one vendor or something. And it's like, oh, shit, we just have to buy more from them. And then really you're like, no, I don't. That's not what I have to do. I have to go sell more.
I would say we're probably more in the wrong because I think a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
Money's important in business, I think. Right? But to me, I just want to get it going, and it just seems like a lot of hassle, a lot of time spent on
thinking about
on the wrong thing.
Yeah,
to me,
but yeah,
Spencer's hot.
So when you think about like an exit sign, a strip fixture, wrap fixture, your commodity items, you're buying them every day, right? So sure. Now if I got three vendors going to sell me the same thing at $20, but one of them's giving me 9 to 12% back. I'm stocking.
Is it that high? It's 9 to 12%?
I got higher, but yeah. You can.
Jeez, I'm not getting that back from my vendors, no.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all willing. It's all based on your growth, really.
Yeah.
That's where you get it. And you have to commit as a distributor and say, I did 50,000 with you last year. I'll do 150 this year. I'll do 200. What do you want to give me that money back? Let's be partners and then you move that business that you're already going to order. You're already going to order a strip.
But see, that's why I'm with Greg. It's like instead of having that conversation, I'd rather be talking to a customer.
Profit's game. But I can make more profit in a couple conversations than my sales guys can make on the street, right?
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, it's a tough one.
If you're buying the right items and you're, you know.
Sure.
You got to use it with your stock.
Get the vendors.
I respectfully abstain from talking about this conversation. Yeah, look, from a vendor standpoint, I think it's part of doing business. It's important to note, and I think that the distributors that don't understand this probably, you know, put themselves in a bad position, that it ultimately comes from somewhere. You know, the manufacturer isn't just coming up with a, you know, an extra percentage that isn't necessarily being reflected in a change in pricing and a change in terms and a change of something. So I think really it depends more on how each person's respective organization is set up, if they would prefer just a, you know, upfront lower cost, which ultimately wouldn't impact, you know, Spencer, in your case, you know, manufacturer X, you have to hit a certain rebate. Maybe that price isn't $20, but maybe that's $25 from manufacturer X, which is probably the case. And now you're not necessarily choosing the best product for your customer, because you're choosing a product that fits in with your rebate scheme, which, you know, I see happens all the time, and it can be to a manufacturer's benefit, or if you're on the outside looking in, it's not as beneficial. So, I mean, I certainly see both sides, but we see a lot of distributors do it probably more so that their sales team is not just giving away product, and that ultimately it helps their bottom line at the end of the day.
What do you prefer to deal with, having that program or just having an upfront cost negotiated?
I don't really have a preference, one way or the other. You know, I see value in both, as long as the distributor understands that the price comes from somewhere. You know, you can't have everything on top of everything on top of everything. You know, at some point there is some level of sacrifice that you have to give up.
It's a price. And you can have it now or you can have it later. That's how I see it. So yeah. If there's rebates on the table, it's because we haven't negotiated the price correctly. You understand what I mean? It's like, yeah. This is what I mean. I think a lot of, what these vendor rebates do is they get you focused on the vendor's business and not your own. Does that make sense? Like, it's like now you're focused on buying as much as you can from a vendor instead of selling to your customers the right stuff. And I think your point is apt. It's got to come from somewhere. Like, yeah. It's not magic. If you're giving a rebate back, it's a price. That's it. So it's a tough one. What do you say, Greg? What do you got?
Next hot topic here is talking online business and how that's affecting our individual companies. I know that, you know, Amazon is a hot topic, but there are online retailers. You can find pricing on just about every product out there in lighting on the website somewhere on the internet.
Sure.
So how is that affecting your guys' business as a process and what you go through? Well, let's start that one. Corey?
What was the question again?
How is online...
See, this is why we can't put these podcasts out. This is why, you know, every time we try to record with these guys, listeners, they act like idiots, like doofuses, and then we can't put the show out. So if you're not listening to this right now, it's because of Corey Schneider. Doesn't take it seriously. He's not listening, folks, and he wants to come on my show. Okay, so online, I mean... Okay, so the first thing I would say is, how many of you guys have transitioned your customers into being able to order from a website as opposed to calling the order desk? Have you done that yet, Brian?
So we have the ability to do that. I find that we haven't probably put in enough work into our website, the search terms and what have you, in order to make it easy for our customers. And by we, I mean me. But the way our online ordering system works, the best thing a customer can do is look through their order history, which generally is the same things they buy over and over again. And we offer the online ordering system to the customers we have that buy the same stuff on a regular basis. So those kinds of people are ordering, you know, a couple boxes of T8s and a box of Ballast, and we move on.
But at this point, that's not preferred by you or them. You would rather have them call in the traditional way. Is that easier for you still?
I would say that I want them to do whatever they want to do to make it easier for them to spend money with us. We can do whatever they want. I would prefer they call in and make an order so we can have a conversation with the guy about his day or whatever. But if it's easier for them while they're... you know, walking out of an audit they just did, or, you know, looking at a shelf in their warehouse and say, I need, 10 of these, 10 of these, and 5 of these, and puts in an order on their phone, then, you know, we'll take the order any way we can, right?
I'm going to make another comparison to the consumer market for you. When you buy a car, do you just go online and purchase it without ever seeing it? You research, right? You find out what you want. Then you go to the dealer to buy it, right?
Yeah, but again, you're talking about a consumer product again, dude.
The dealership. The lighting industry is similar. You can't buy everything online, right? You can't go to Amazon.
I think you can.
You can if you
I think
want.
You can, actually.
And I'm sure you guys have heard the same thing I've heard from my customers. Oh, I bought that online. It didn't work. Well, duh. You didn't talk to somebody who had knowledge and would have told you, oh, that's 6, not 8 inch. Or that's the wrong Kelvin. That's the wrong voltage. I fully believe our industry will continue to be that way. Online will be there to kill our margins. That's always going to happen, right? Everybody's going to price check you once you give them a product code. They can Google it real quick, see what the price is. As long as you're not gouging, you should be good. But you still need the knowledge of a salesperson if you're going to do a full lighting package. You're not doing lighting packages online. They may buy their MRO. They may buy some, you know, cheap stuff here and there. But as long as you prove the value when you're doing everything else, their controls, their, you know, outdoor lighting, whatever it is, you've proven that, they're going to buy their day-to-day from you too.
There's such a – the lighting business has changed so much since I started it. Like, I used to just – yeah, can you drop the F-bombs, man? We're trying to record a show here, Spencer.
That's a fact.
Oh, I thought you said that's F. Oh, it's like, oh, God. Okay. So, no, but I mean, it's it's when I started, it was really selling MR16s and F40 T12 cool whites and all this kind of stuff, and you were just selling light bulbs. And now it's gone from that to be who can provide the best service, who knows the most about this. Now it's really changed to a knowledge based industry now, really heavily, and there's no agreement on, you know, what is the right thing. It's us as lighting guys, we're really just learning as we go, and be like, maybe we're a little bit ahead of the curve or whatever it is, but there's right now everything is so wide open in terms of technology and what they like, what they're going to learn in the next 10 years in lighting. If they can figure out productivity gains and really figure out the health effects of lighting, that's going to be worth a fortune to us. Like, if they actually come up with something that works, like it actually works, like it actually does. Yes. If they can have that, there's going to be a fortune to be made, dude.
And if you're the person looking for that, where do you go?
Nobody knows right now. Nobody knows what the right thing is.
Yeah, you're not going online, I would venture to say.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure you're not going online. So that's a good point.
Then you're going to Google lighting distributor, and then our names are going to pop up.
Maybe.
Corey, you have any comment on that now that you maybe know what the question is?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can get a light bulb anywhere. I mean, you go to the grocery store, you go to Home Depot. I mean, people come to us because we sell knowledge. I mean, and how to install it.
But that's new.
What do you mean?
Was it always that way?
I mean, we go to Home Depot, Lowe's, Ace, all those companies, and we go down the aisles and we give the guys flyers. And say, hey, when the guy comes to your store and you only have 200 SKUs and you don't know what it is, send him to our place and we'll help the guy up. And, I mean, we have guys coming in with flyers. Hey, the guy at Home Depot told me to come. You got the solution because they can't figure it out. And the guy at Lowe's or the guy at Ace. Every day. The guys actively pass out our flyers, yes.
That's amazing. So. Yeah. I suppose they don't have the resources to go get what they want. But like,
they don't know where to look.
They don't know where to look. And so we get other distributors in town that are full line distributors sending customers our way because they don't know what they're looking for.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that they do that.
Yeah.
And like my guys, like we never send a customer across town to find something because, like, you know, they have a good experience over there and they might not come back. So,
Josh, from your standpoint,
you know, some people actually want to help people, eh, Brian? Like, they actually care. I know.
Now, from a manufacturing standpoint, you have different price levels for your distributors, and they have the capability to advertise whatever they want online. Do you guys ever get involved in controlling that and tell somebody, hey, you shouldn't be selling
get that off that Amazon or something like that?
Interesting topic. There is the concept of map pricing, which is mandating to online distributors the advertised pricing that they can put on there. In this changing environment, I think that MAP pricing is only relevant if you can police it properly and you can update your pricing properly to make sure that whatever price you have established as an advertised price is realistic and is helping not only yourself, but more than anything, you know, your distributor partner sell the product. Because if you don't adjust your pricing accordingly to the market, then it'll either be too high or too low, and it has the potential to have negative effects one way or the other. So, we are certainly very mindful of that. We don't have MAP pricing in place, I think more so because, as I just mentioned, the market is just changing too quickly. So we do not mandate to our distributors what price they can market online. I know other distributors or other manufacturers, not only in this business, but other businesses do that, where I think the product cycle is a little more stable. But as quickly changing as this market is, we've opted not to go in that direction. Does that address your question?
It does, yeah. That's good.
So does anybody market items, I know, Michael, you do, on Amazon that are, you know, overstock items or stuff that hasn't moved, anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, the Amazon.ca is different than Amazon.com. There's definitely more available and more competitive on Amazon.com. But, yeah, if you're sitting on old light bulbs, put them on Amazon for sure.
I've run into where I've tried to put, can I mention a manufacturer name? Sure. So where we'll try to put like a Philips SKU of something that we, and they won't allow it.
Well, you have to have, before you can create something on Amazon, you have the item has to already be created on Amazon and approved by who made it. Or you have to put it up in a different way. So you can't put their product code, but you can put something like it. And you can do it, but it's not illegal. You just can't use their brand, right? Maybe spell the name wrong. So that would be one way to do it. No, but I mean, yes, you have to have approval from the manufacturer. But it's a good way to move most of the SKUs. If you have like, I don't know, a couple boxes of F96 3500K, say, or whatever, if you put it up on Amazon, it's likely to move. Someone will buy it. They'll find someone who'll buy it. Yeah. But you know, you got to remember, Amazon gets to take all your information. They probably know more about the lighting business than we do now. I'm not kidding you. Like, they know all the lights that sell, what's selling, what's popular, what isn't. They have all the information. Like, Amazon is like a shopping mall, but that, like, imagine if you were a shopping mall and you owned a shopping mall, and then all of your tenants were paying you per transaction. But then also you got to know the ins and outs of their business, and then you only sold the stuff that was really popular. That's what Amazon does. Like, Amazon will put up their, you know, if they find a product super popular and profitable, Amazon will start selling it. Amazon itself will become a vendor for that product and undercut you, and they don't pay commission to themselves. So it's kind of unfair the way Amazon operates. They shouldn't be allowed to be a marketplace and compete with you. The government should regulate that. They should stop Amazon from competing with its own vendors. That's what most people don't like about it, is that you're actually in bed with the enemy when you're dealing with Mr. Bezos.
There you go. Now, on to another topic here on rebates, just kind of getting a feel. We're all cover different parts of the country or other countries.
You're talking about energy efficiency rebates, huh?
Yeah, okay. Wherever you're from. So just kind of get a feel for what our individual markets are looking like. Are rebates staying steady? Are they decreasing, going away altogether? And what happens to your business as that change comes through? So I'll just chime in on from my standpoint first is on Minneapolis market. We have a lot of rebate programs, and for the most part, they're staying pretty steady, but I have seen next year is going to start declining some. And I'm welcoming that to some degree. I think they're overpaid a lot of times, overfunded. And then they run out of money. We have had a number of programs in our area that ran out of money in May for the year already. So all the people that tried to do something for the next 6 months didn't have any money to do it. So I'm for rebates declining. I'm not for them going away altogether. I know we've had some discussions on that because it does help our business for sure. But I think it's just something that needs to be there, but not be focused on as much. And that's kind of where I'm hoping it's leading to. But
time. So your Corey's market rebates are gone, right?
So there's two utilities, and the main one ended their program October of last year. So they said it's only for schools, no other vertical. So like general market, it's gone.
Wow.
Now there is another program in town. It's like 25 cents a kilowatt reduced or a watt reduced or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, we're not doing as much with them.
Yeah.
So it's a smaller territory.
So and what did you've obviously seen your business be reduced?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely affected us, but I think in the long run we'll be better. But we overstaffed based on there being more rebates.
What do they state their reasoning for getting rid of the rebate program was?
So they're saying that Arizona has a lot of solar power. So they said when they were reducing the load, they noticed that between 4 and 8 p.m. was the peak hour where they were. Where people were using the most electricity, sure. And they really want to cut. They called it like the duck peak or something, and it's has to do with they want to put in electronic vehicle. They move the money towards electronic vehicle charging stations. So when people go home, they're plugging in their cars, and that's eating up a lot of the electricity.
So the overall funding of a rebate program is
there. It's just not for lighting. So they don't believe in it for lighting. They're shifting it to electronic vehicle charging stations.
You think it'll ever come back for lighting?
For maybe for controls or something, but they said, you know, the prices are already low enough that people should just do it.
Paybacks are there. You don't need the rebate.
You don't need the rebate.
How about you, Spence?
Well, we're in a pretty progressive market, so ours, they're still alive, but most of them are all based on controls now. You know, how you're controlling the load rather than what the load is you're saving.
Like you have to do a control to get a rebate?
You have to do it, yes.
And is a control as simple as just an occupancy sensor in the wall?
Sometimes. It depends on your space, the vertical, all that. Those come into play. And what they did with
Josh made a good point. So you're in Arizona. Corey was just talking about Arizona. Spencer's talking about the Pacific Northwest, basically Seattle area.
Yeah.
So carry on, though, yeah.
But, I mean, they moved most of your commodity stuff to downstream programs, you know, off invoice, small dollars. Nothing that helps move the needle as a distributor, but it's there. It's nice, and you have it. And it's good to start the conversation with the customer. But mostly, I foresee the next 3 years will all be control based. Yeah.
But see, like, this is what I don't understand about controls are the most difficult area of lighting to actually figure out how much someone's going to save. You know, it's like controls. I don't know. I don't know if they, you know. Yeah, I mean, data loggers can help.
They're using history, and yeah, they're. They make a lot of assumptions.
And sometimes controls keep lights on. Like sometimes they're not commissioned properly and they keep lights on. So I don't see a big. I think if they move from rebates from load reduction towards control, you're going to see a lot less rebates being paid out.
We are a lot less. But you know, that starts the conversation, and you can still get the sale because the utility knows. The ROI with the decrease in pricing is there, and people will still buy it without a rebate.
Yeah, so my market, the Iowa, Des Moines, Iowa market, like the rebates are a really big deal, and some would say at this table they're outrageous. they are scheduled to go down March 1st next year, and we don't know exactly by how much, but... it's probably going to be a fairly significant percentage off. I've heard anywhere from 50 to 80% off. And that seems to be about every year for the last 4 years. It's come down by about 50% a year.
But you're still pretty insane, though.
Yeah.
No, Josh, from your standpoint in dealing with distributors all over the country, do you find some that are rebates always brought up, or are there times where people don't even talk about rebates in your programs or your product being DLC rated or – Energy Star or anything like that?
I think it's very location specific. Across the board, everyone, the first question, is it DLC listed? A lot of times people don't even know necessarily the categories where DLC doesn't have a category. You have to kind of clarify that. But what's interesting to me about the whole rebate schedule is it really can vary from state to state, or county to county for that matter. One area could offer a certain rebate for a type C LED tube. Another one could give it for ballast compatible. Another one for bypass. Or one market could only sell, you know, offer a rebate for a fixture that has integrated, you know, daylight harvesting, occupancy vacancy sensing, 0 to 10 volt dimming. And I think it's very important, I mean, really for all the listeners out there to make sure that they're working with people, in particular, I mean, distributors that actually know the differences between the utility companies and the rebates that they offer, because the people that we're seeing that are moving a lot of product really know the ins and outs of the rebate markets and are able to, you know, kind of take that information and really add value to their end users and customer base. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Does anybody here at the table, like, specifically advertise, I mean, like, whether it be print or commercial or email blast, whatever, toward these rebates, and what do you do?
I've seen some companies in my market that whatever the minimum selling price is, they blast flyers out on that. I never got into that personally. I've always liked to, you know, have some more control over it than saying it's going to be automatically this price because that's the lowest. But I definitely see it, and I'm sure there's advantages to it, to blasting it out there. And so from my standpoint, I haven't done it. But Corey, anything?
We did it about 5 years ago when the rebates were hot, but haven't done it since. It's, you know, doesn't seem like it's worth it now.
Rebates.
The only thing we do is we put a thing on our invoice packing list and counter, ask us about rebates. Starts a conversation. That's it. We don't tell people what it is until they, you know, because you don't know what utility they're with, you know, which, you know, municipality they might be involved with, or utility. So we're not throwing any prices out there. No way.
Yeah, I mean, it's for me, you know, when they had the instant rebate in store coupons, yeah, we blasted that out for sure. Before that, when it comes to the engineered rebates for the projects, yeah, we do advertise that we handle people's rebates. How much of it is? I think you're going to have a really difficult time in Ontario selling a lighting project without a rebate. I think it's going to be like, if it ends, it's going to be, I don't think it matters whether it's 5%, 10%, or 50%. I think if the rebates are gone and there is no rebate, I'm going to have to make up a fake program and apply people to it. Like, yeah, we're going to get you a rebate. It's going to be this program over here. And they fill out some form and they send it to me. And then I write them a check. And it's like, it's a fake program. I just charge them more, but I still get a rebate. Like that. I think that's how it's going to have to be.
Not a terrible idea. I mean, I think you're going to have to get into different markets. That's what you're going to have to do. I mean, you can't be a retrofitter forever. I mean, once everything's retrofitted, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's true.
So you got to get into different things.
There you go. Well, another topic is just on your staff and what you guys are looking at. Are any of you actively searching for any new employees? And if so, what type of position are they? Anybody want to start that? Spence?
I would first say we're always actively looking for salespeople. You want somebody, obviously, that has a base of accounts that they can bring, you know, to you. And that is extremely hard to find in lighting.
You know what? All the guys are old.
Most of them, yes.
Yeah, the guys that have a book of business, it's all the old guys.
Yeah.
And they, you know what? A lot of them come in and, you know, they sell. We have a lot of guys that work with us that, you know, they sell toilet paper and they sell, you know, whatever, like for businesses, for buildings. They sell in toilet paper. They're bringing them cleaning products and light bulbs, right? And it's, you know, all those guys that work on full commission like that, that had a book of business, they're all over 50.
But let me ask you this. Is it worth hiring them for 10 years or 5 years, whatever it may be, to get that book of business to then maybe flip it into a younger salesperson who then you can hand the book? Because that's my biggest constraint.
I find young people, like, I find the younger the generation, it takes you a good couple years to build relationships with people.
But you have to be able to give them the lead, right? You're going to hire somebody new. They know nothing about lighting, but they're a great salesperson.
I find that's a good way to lose your customers, because then that person quits and then a new person comes in.
Well, you gotta
make
sure
it's like
rotating,
right? I don't know, dude. There's just something about the way the old guys did it that the young people can't do it.
I don't know what it is.
But see, that's why I find value in hiring maybe that older guy for 5 years. Let him be around your staff.
Mentor
somebody younger, sure. And have that book of business that when that person decides to retire, you can hand over.
You want to jump in on this, Brian?
I don't really have much to add.
I mean, I'm looking for sales as well and counter sales as well. So looking
ahead. I'll tell you, man, a good counter salesperson, a person that knows what they're talking about, bro.
It's worth their weight in gold.
Yeah, dude, for sure. Yeah. For sure. Like someone that they walk in and they're talking about color temperature and there's no issue. They know how to deal with the ballast and the sign ballast, and they can talk about a sign ballast. And then, oh yeah, there's this sign hero stuff you can do too. It's not a stretch for them to just go from one thing to the other very quickly with the customer at the counter. That's tough to find, man. That is tough to find.
And Corey, we've talked to you in the past about the training program you have for new employees. Would you prefer someone with lighting background, or would you prefer them not to have any?
If I get somebody with lighting background, they better have a book of business and really have a great reputation. There's a lot of lighting retreads out there, just old guys that have been in the industry forever and just get jobs because they've been in lighting. They've worked at X job and they know one customer or two customers and they don't know anything. So I'd rather take a young kid with a good personality and train him up. And, you know, I could teach somebody lighting. You can't train personality. So that's my perspective.
Yeah, I would add to that. You know, I certainly agree with Corey. Obviously, anyone with lighting experience is preferred. You know, in my organization, we are, you know, actively growing. And one thing that we really look for more than probably anything else is just a good fit within our organization. You know, do they share a similar mentality of how we go to market of, you know, bending over backwards? And as crazy as it sounds, I mean, just doing what you say you're going to do.
Dude, that's so crazy. Greg and I talk about that all the time. Like how it's like, that's such a simple concept, but it's like most people don't understand that success is based on keeping your friggin' word. Like yes. It's so many people don't keep their word and then they wonder where they went wrong. And it's like, you said you were going to do that for that guy and then you didn't do it. So now you're wondering what the problem is. You know, I can figure it out real quick here. You said something that wasn't true, and now that person doesn't trust you anymore. You know why? Because that's how the naked ape works. When you lie to the naked ape, he doesn't trust you anymore. That's how all. And it's shocking how people don't know that.
It seems very simple, right?
Like you just hit the nail on the head. It's like keeping your word. Like I said, you said you were going to do this. Why didn't you do it? Oh, you know, ba boo ba ba boo bing bong. I had this other excuse. No, dude. You know, that's why I think it's interesting how rare that quality is. And then when people say, well, you know, how come this person is successful? Well, because they work hard and they do what they say they're going to do. That's pretty simple, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I personally, you know, started in the industry with absolutely no lighting experience. So, you know, I might take a little more open mind than others, but, you know, I love getting new people in the industry if they have that drive and that interest in learning. In many cases, they can be more powerful than someone that, you know, Corey, to your end, you know, has been in the industry, done things a certain way for so long. And, I mean, the industry is different than it was before.
You're calling them retreads or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, just recycle these guys. They show up at, you know, XYZ company 6 months later, and then they don't last, and they show up somewhere else 6 months later, and...
It's kind of gross, actually. You know, there's something about, I hate to say that to disparage people, but it's almost like you have this person who worked for you or whatever. Then he moves to another lighting place. Then he goes to another lighting place. And it's like, how many different, like, it kind of gets gross after a while. You know, how many different people are you going to go and try to sell for? You know what? You know, there's something about it, a retread kind of idea that I agree with you, man. It's tough. It's a tough one. What's the next question there, Greg?
I'm kind of out of the ones that I wanted to start with. We want to pass it around and see if anybody else had any. We talked before and see if there's any questions you want to start with. So, Spencey.
So you guys have probably been getting all the emails I've been getting the last 3 months. Everybody's price is going up, right? We're tariffing it, whatever.
Comedian.
Two-part question. What are you doing in your business? Are you pre-ordering product? I mean, how are you quoting it to begin with? That's a hard part. A project that may be next year. And what do you think of the tariffs?
If you go to getagriponlighting.com, or you go to Lighthead Online Magazine, you'll see there's quite a few shows on tariffs, Spencer. So we were expecting you to be a little bit more of a listener to the show. All right, go ahead,
Corey. We're going to raise our prices.
Raising the prices, yeah.
And then the people will pay more.
Why not?
Right now I'm at the point of I'm going to find somebody who's not playing the game. You know, I'm going to work with a manufacturer who's going to price it right. Sure, they can say they're going to raise it. But I'm going to wait till January when it really kicks in.
With Greg, you know what's weird? With Greg, it just seems like he thinks it's crap because it's just a distraction from what really matters. You know what I mean? It's like, don't make anything up. Stop making up stuff. Just get back to selling lights with me. Like, that's how I kind of feel like you feel about it.
Yeah. It is. It's like it's a waste of time to me, right?
Yeah, it's like, even talk about being a distraction
because they don't know, and they're all just taking advantage of it. I think it's right now. We, you know, our whole discussion was before, but it just seems like it's convenient. Yeah, we want to raise price. Yeah, we want more money.
Yeah, sure.
Let's raise them.
Yeah, this is our reason now. We got our chance. And Craig's just like, come on, dude. I'm too busy selling light bulbs here for you guys to like start sending me letters.
There you go.
A letter.
Yeah.
You sent it in the mail. Did you put a stamp on that thing?
That is weird, getting letters in the mail. You're right.
Yeah, we're probably with Corey. Like, our prices will have to go up as well. I mean, we can't eat it either.
Why wouldn't you pre-order to make 25 extra points? Free. I would hold inventory for a year to make 25 points free. That's 25% of your money on a year? Well, you're not getting that anywhere.
Yeah, that's true. It depends on the product.
True.
Depends on the situation and how quickly you can turn it around.
I mean, I've been playing a lot of table games. I can't make 25% a year.
So, let's say you make 25%.
Speak it to the mic. Speak it to the mic.
Let's say you make the 25%, but then in March, Trump says, the tariffs are gone. Then you're stuck with all the stock.
I would call my vendor and say I need a credit,
I doubt then that the price is going back down.
I do too. I don't see it. I think your point of they're all playing games. We can raise. This is an excuse to raise our price, right? I think that's a vast majority. The feeling that nobody has the same exact percentage increase, time frame increase, and nobody seems to have any clue of what really is going up. It's all BS.
And nobody's willing to talk about it. We've asked several manufacturers to come on and discuss it.
I don't think they know either, honestly. I don't think they do.
So why can they raise it if they don't know?
And as a distributor...
It's a distraction, guys. It's a distraction.
But as a distributor, you don't care that prices go up. Inflation's good, right? It means all of our prices go up. We make more money on GP. We make more dollars.
But I think what Greg's pissed off about is that he's like... It's almost as if Greg feels like, stop bothering me with nonsense.
But I see it as an opportunity to make free money. I stock in... Let's say 100K. I take 100K line of credit out of my bank. Let's say the bank's running at prime right now. What's 5.25 plus? That's so you're about 5.5 right now.
Yeah, but you still have to sell that stuff, dude.
If
you bring in inventory.
But then in my computer system, it's going to have that day's price, which is 25% higher than I paid for it in October.
Do you track it that well in your system?
Well, it's
you have real time.
It will go into your payables.
Hang on. You have real time. Your accounting system is giving you the real time price of a product rather than what you paid for it?
No. Yeah, well, it's giving you what it costs today, replacement cost, what it costs to reorder it today.
That's more sophisticated than mine for sure.
Okay.
What about you, Corey? You seeing what it costs you today? Are you seeing what you paid for it?
What I paid for it.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't have it anything in real time costing. No way.
Future price, what it is today?
Oh, okay. What's next? What's next? That's definitely a do you want to jump in on this, Josh?
Get your question. The vendors are doing it. They're doing it to all of us.
Yeah, you got to speak to the mic. No. I told you.
All the vendors are doing this to us. They're raising all of our pricing 10-1, 10-15, 11-1, 11-15, 12-1, whatever they're going to raise the price. They have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars of inventory already in the U.S. that is not being tariffed. Why are they doing that? To make record profits. why aren't we dipping into that as distributors? You know the big guys are. You know Rexel's placing an order, right? I mean, they've got to be seven digits. They're all going to do it. So smaller guys, who we all probably rely on a line of credit with our local bank, why wouldn't you? I'll go rent a storage shed. I don't.
It's risky. I mean, it's risky. It's a lot of $100,000. It's
a lot of risk.
I mean, what if the price changes? What if? How do you know if you're going to sell it all?
Keep the mic here.
Has the product changed at all in the last 6 months on any of this stuff? No. No, you're buying some solid product. Nothing changes in LED, huh?
So what do we? It's a, you know what? The White Devil. The White Devil. If the devil was a white man, he'd be called Spencer Miles. We're not cutting that. That's going to go onto the air, buddy. You know, we're going to start live streaming the show. So it's going to be just uncut. But you know what? The idea of it's, I think your position on it from the beginning that you thought it was a distraction is the best. It's true. It's like, that's a distraction. Whatever. So we'll move on to the next topic. What's the next question? Josh, you got a question? The crew, Brian Huff, the adventurer. What
are you doing in your business to minimize your tax burden?
I set up a trust. So there's a Michael Colligan family trust, and I pay myself through a trust. My children are beneficiaries of the trustee, beneficiaries of the trust. So that allows you to do stuff. I don't know. It's probably similar in Iowa, but I mean. You have to get to a point when that makes sense. I would say that setting up a trust is a good way to do it. What about you, Greg?
I just sell light bulbs. Remember, guys? I don't get into all this stuff, really. But to minimize taxes, you just pay yourself more, don't you? I mean, you end up getting taxed personally, but if you want to minimize it for your business, just pay it out.
See, money bags Eric. He's got so much money. That he doesn't care. He just swims around in it. It's like, oh, that part's for the government over there. My board.
We did EPACT 179D jobs. We did a job last year. We got an $800,000 tax deduction.
Come on.
So
you got to use it on your corporate tax?
I didn't take the whole deduction. But
or your personal tax?
It flows through the corporation.
To your personal tax. Come on, man. That's amazing.
So you can if you do a EPACT 179 job for a government entity, you can
take the tax credit.
Take the tax deduction. It's a deduction, not a credit. You guys had that energy tax guy on.
Yeah.
That's legit.
It's legit.
You could go forward and backwards.
Wow.
I think backwards 3 years and forward 20 or something.
Wow.
And so you do one job. I mean, I got a surplus of tax deductions. Sure.
You're going to be good for a couple of years, yeah.
I mean, I split it with my dad, and but it's still.
Sure. Wow. That's a lot. That sounds a lot less. That sounds a lot better than the Michael Colligan family trust. That pile goes to the government. This is my pile.
I'm more of the socialist in this room, I guess, as I reinvested in the people of our company.
Shut up, man.
I'm dead serious.
That's so gross.
It is, but it's true.
Listen, White Devil, we know what you're really like. Yes, this is going on the internet, so you just stop about talking about you invest in the people. I get it. Yeah. Come on, man.
I mean, well, one thing you can really do is write down your inventory, first of all, right? Write off your inventory. Debt inventory. That's a tax. Boom, right after
yeah,
tax.
It's a good point. Yep, you can write it off.
Right after bad debt.
But if you sell it, then you have to unwrite it off.
Yeah.
You do it every year?
Whatever you got to do, yeah.
Should we talk about what do you guys have in inventory? How much do you have
seven
in
it? Figures. But if you write, that's a good chunk right there. If you take your over 24 months inventory and just write it off, buys down your tax liability. Bad debt's another one. You know, all those freight charges your customers didn't pay that you left in their account, write it off.
How much of an issue is bad debt for you guys?
It's not really an issue. The time we run into it is companies that have defaulted on a line of credit. They're small.
We get a couple bankruptcies a year.
Yeah, you're going to run into a couple thousand, 10,000 maybe a year.
We do an allowance for doubtful accounts. We also do an allowance for warranty work. right? And yeah, I mean, some people don't pay, dude. I know Craig doesn't worry about it.
That's right. So we'll move on to a new subject because I don't worry about it. I think the last maybe question here coming from Josh. What do you got?
So as everyone knows, the lighting industry is changing quickly. You know, I think the people that are succeeding are the most knowledgeable and are on top of their game. How do you guys make sure that you are always the most knowledgeable on the lighting side of the world, both from an install and a product standpoint?
I was thinking of starting a podcast so I could learn about it for a bit, but that's probably what it is for me. That's why we did that, because I wanted to be in front of that. But I think it is mostly this kind of stuff. It's conversations in the business with, you know, I mean, I've learned so much from Corey and his dad, to be honest with you. And from Greg, from Spencer, from Brian, from you guys at Keystone. So I think people, and like, if you're not a member of Nailed, I don't know why. Because if you listen to my show every week, or you listen to Greg and I, and you're not a member of Nailed, that doesn't make any sense to me. You should join Nailed. Because I don't think many people realize how powerful it is to be around other people that are truly your peers. Like Corey and I are peers. We're colleagues. What does that mean? That means we do the same thing every day. We're technically competitors, but we trust one another and we're willing to share information with one another because the value of the sharing of the information is worth the risk. Does that make sense? It's worth the risk. And so if you're listening to this and you're not a member of Nailed, I don't know why. I think that's a mistake for you. Because I learn a lot. I learn everything I've learned from other people in the lighting business that are doing what I do every day. And I've learned a little bit in the field. I've learned a little bit doing, you know, whatever. But usually the most valuable information comes from the Greg, the Corey's, the Spencer's, the Brian's of the world.
Any reply to that, Spencer, Corey, or you want me to jump in?
I think one of the things, we probably don't do enough manufacturer trainings, whatever, but really it's on the job training. It's, you know, working through a problem that your customer has and figuring it out with your vendor partners. And you know, I'm pretty fortunate, you know, we've had conversations over the last couple of days. You know, my guys that I have in my office, they're grizzled veterans, and they're really good. And we're a smaller shop than most everybody here. But, you know, having new guys coming through the door every few months, like, it just sounds terrible. Trying to keep up with everything that's going on.
I think Michael hit on the head, though. It's the organizations, like Nailed, that you're part of. The networking, the buying groups. That's where it starts, right? You meet people, you learn. Mm. On my day-to-day... it's social media, really. That's where I learn.
Really, yeah.
I'm following, I don't know, every, you know, lighting Twitter person I can follow. You know, you read the one sentence a day, and you may once a week see something interesting. You hit that article, you read it, you learn something that you can then take back to your crew and say, hey, did you know this? I saw a story about a restroom in a really bad heroin area where they changed all the lights to blue so people couldn't shoot up heroin in the bathroom because you can't see your veins with blue lights. Very interesting. I had the same issue come up, no shit, and about a month later, I said, let's put blue lights in your bathroom. And I learned that off social media. So
which you know, avenues in social media do you use? Is it Twitter, Facebook, Twitter. LinkedIn?
I use Twitter.
Only Twitter?
Only Twitter.
It's quick. Like, I'm curious sentence. To hear everyone else.
I've recently, Greg and I are going to do a lot of work on Twitter. We're going to start. And it's interesting because Instagram and Twitter, each of these social media platforms has a different sort of way of working. They're unique, right? So, you know, Facebook is for the oldens, you know. Instagram is a younger crowd. But people make a lot of money on Instagram, dude. Don't kid yourself. Like, there is money to be made on these platforms. People make money on Twitter. So I think Twitter is really the most suitable for the lighting business. I think it's... the most likely candidate for, you understand what I mean? Like, yeah. Where we're going with this thing is on Twitter. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, you get the alert on your phone. It's usually a sentence. if it interests you, you click it, you know, you read the article. And they can reach you immediately. It's, and if you have a question, you can direct message them. And usually somebody running that account will answer you or send you to somebody to give you the answer.
So I've actually never used Twitter before. For whatever reason, I've held out. But even after here, I might change that. But I personally have found, for whatever reason, the past month that LinkedIn has actually been a great avenue of kind of similar concepts to you, just reading articles that aren't even necessarily lighting related, but just general business topic. You can follow a lot of different corporations, people that, you know, might be inspirations for you just to make yourself a better person in both the business and personal world, but as well a lot of different lighting situations where, you know, similar situation. I saw a hospital in Philadelphia, where I'm from, you know, they're using circadian rhythm to help, you know, make transitions for patients throughout the day and night and things like that, which was something I wouldn't have otherwise, you know, probably learned about.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, you so we're kind of old with this group at the table here. You're what? You're probably youngest, 35, Corey, right? So I'm 41 and
33.
34. There you go. So, but I mean, but we are kind of old in that realm, right? Of the Twitterverse and all sort of thing. But you know, it's interesting that I just started on Twitter last month, and I put out one of my videos that I did on PCB ballasts. So we recycle a lot of PCB ballasts, polychlorinated biphenyls, right? Very dangerous chemical. And there's still tons of them out there. Look at me, folks. There is tons of polychlorinated biphenyl ballasts out there. You know why? Because they left them in the fixtures in Ontario. Because it was so expensive to recycle them that people, when they went to T8, they just put the ballast and left the two PCB ballasts in the fixture. And it's a real issue. But I put out one of my videos on PCBs, and I was describing it, and I had a whole bunch of marine biologists start following me. It was weird. It was like, and then this one lady who was like a marine biologist, she like, so because I in my video, it was a 2-minute video, and it's been watched, I don't know, like 3,000 or 4,000 times. And then I tweeted it out, and I had like hashtag hazardous waste or something like that. And so she watched the video, and then she asked me, what do they smell like? Because I knew what, like, PCB ballasts have a certain smell. If you've been around them, you know what they smell like, right? And so she asked me what they smell like. And this is the beauty of social media. It's like this marine biologist who cares about whales and fish and cetaceans and whatever is tweeting at this lighting guy to find out what PCBs smell like. You know, and it's like, I was telling her, it's kind of like, it doesn't smell like gasoline. But you know how everybody knows the smell of gasoline, and some people like it and some people hate it, but everybody knows it, what it smells like after the first time you smell it? That's what PCB ballasts smell like. It's the same thing. It's like a chemical kind of smell. So we were tweeting back and forth on this, and I thought, this is extremely powerful, actually. Someone with very specific knowledge is helping someone else with very specific knowledge. So on that note, I think, you know, there's an upside to this social media game.
Yeah, and just to chime back in on Josh's, and we'll probably close it down here. I think what everybody's saying right now is it's all about communication and how you stay on top of it. You know, you can get that from a variety of avenues and talking with each other. I think in-field experience is still huge. You can see a lot when you're there and talking to a customer.
Yeah, for sure.
And getting that information, and then also getting it from other people in your organization. So you can do that easily. You know, how we do it is we do weekly meetings where we
That's a good idea.
Have yes, a team. Yeah. And we have, each month I have four Mondays or whatever. We'll have one where it's a share meeting. Everybody comes in and shares what they have going on. We have another that's a challenge meeting. Everybody emails a challenge of pictures and says, here's what I've run into. How can I fix this? And we all go round table discussion, figure it out. And then you remember that for next time. Like you talked about, Spencer, the blue light and the heroin. Now I know if somebody's hitting heroin in Minneapolis, I'm going blue light. And yeah. So, I mean, it's things like that. And then we do a deep dive where we take a certain environment, like a lay-in fixture. What do you need to know about that environment? You know, plenum depth, everything you need to get into when you're doing a lay-in fixture.
And then that's powerful.
Yeah, and then have that. So then you, as long as people can retain it, and I think that's the biggest struggle for a lot.
But you know what? It's not even retainment. It's just like exposing themselves to the process of solution finding.
True.
That's what it is. That's all you're doing. You're like, this is how you figure out a solution. And like people are like, it's such a, I'll be honest with you. It's such a wonderful privilege for your employees to have access to you. I hate to
Thank
say
you.
That.
Thank you.
No, but seriously, like that's what it is. It's like you have access to solutions. Let's figure them out. Right. And then how can you incorporate this into your daily routine so you don't need it anymore? You can find out your own solutions. So this is the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast live from Las Vegas. Not live, but recorded from Las Vegas, from Planet Hollywood. That's right, Chief Chavez at U.S. Customs and Border Patrol Agency. I'm here. I'm recording. I did it. Thank you for listening, folks. And yes, that's the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Everyone at the table, if you just watch that episode on YouTube or if you listen to it, everybody that spoke on that episode or you see at the table there is a customer of Keystone Technologies. Go to KeystoneEtech.com, baby. You know what else? They're all members of Nailed. That's right, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org. Greg, you know what? Keystone supports Nailed, supported the podcast. Man, that's an up-and-coming company. I think they're going to continue to grow. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. What they are doing is something that I don't see a lot of manufacturers do, is actually listen to the people that buy from them and take those recommendations and suggestions and do something about it. There's a lot of people that listen and say, oh, yeah, we'll think about that or we'll try to figure it out. Keystone, you tell them about it. A couple weeks later, it's done. Not always, but for the most part. And then because of that, you buy from them because they're delivering the solutions that you need to be able to sell to your customer.
You know what? It's so funny about how I've always learned from my customers. You know, when I'm out in the field, mm-hmm. I listen to them and you learn from them. You know, Keystone has really adopted that, which is fuels their growth, which makes them the retrofit kings, light made easy. Go to KeystoneEtech.com. And if you've made it this far, you probably realize that the guys in Nail drink a lot of beer, hang out, have fun, have a laugh. So join the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, Greg. That's what they should do.
Everybody should do it. Sign it up.
Sign it up, man. So thank you for listening. That's 50 episodes, baby. That's a body of work, Greg Eric. That's a body of work.
So far, it's just begun.
So far, it's just begun. We're just starting to roll. And so, yeah, thanks, folks, for listening. Episode 50, Get a Grip on Lighting.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for us.